White Noise Podcast. We show entertainment stuff. Billy and Seth, David and Billy, and David and Seth, and Billy again. This is the best show in the entire world. Movies, TV, video games. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to White Noise Weekly, episode 14 on the White Noise Podcast. We got a big episode today. This is, you know, halfway through the year. Well, I guess technically we're not in July yet, but it's going to air in July. But essentially, 6 months in, halfway through the year, that means it's time to relook at our Hall of Fame, put more things in, look at what the best of this year is so far. And joining me this week is David Hunter and Seth Juniak. What else, guys?
Howdy.
Not much. How's it going?
I'm excited to do this. I'm excited to have more discussions. Not arguments, discussions about what we love and,
shut up,
you know, opinions and...
What? No, we're going to have arguments. What are you talking about?
I'm sure we won't have any, you know, more discussions about, like, I don't know, Game of Thrones versus True Detective that we had last time or anything other passionate heed like that, you know, Scott Pilgrim versus the World or... I'm sure it'll all be, you know, very positive, right? Positive.
Yep, we're going to be all positive, all zen.
I agree. What he said.
Okay. Well, so I want to give everyone kind of like a recap of like what we're doing here. So essentially, this is like halfway through the year. We're gonna look at the best TV shows and movies and video games from this year as like potential, you know, Hall of Fame nominees at the end of the year. We're then going to nominate six more things, two each, to the Hall of Fame to fill it out a little more after we introduced the concept like about a month and a half ago. And just so people know, in the past, we nominated three TV shows, three video games, three movies each. We're not really sticking to a format of like what kind of genre we are nominating from. So it'll be a little interesting to see what they choose. It's going to be a little less predictable in like what genre. But I guess I'll get to the historical Hall of Fame that we're looking at, you know, in the, like, a little
have,
bit later.
Do we have theme music for it?
No, no, it's all the same. It's all the same.
But can it be like the Universal Studios, you know, do-do-do-do-do-do, bum-bum-do. Can it be that?
That would be pretty good. We should play that.
Seth, if you want to hum it, you can go ahead. I did that with the Jurassic World spoiler cast. I'm fine doing that as well.
Billy, we all know from the intro you have the best singing voice out of all of us.
All right, well, if you could give me, like, you know, 20 minutes, you know, or not 20 minutes. Give me about a month, and I'll, like, produce, like, an a cappella version of it where it's, like, me doing, like, 60 voices for it.
Look, I'm just saying... It's before you hate on the intro song, David.
I wasn't. I was saying you have the best voice.
Listen, I've heard Kesha sing, and I'm pretty sure I'm not that much different.
I saw her live, and she was all right, man.
How'd they get the auto-tune in while live?
Oh, I mean, it works exactly like almost every single pop one. She only actually sings maybe three or four songs.
I would love to be, like, purposely. If I was, like, working for her, I'd purposely have, like, some malfunction.
Well, it's actually funny. It did malfunction while I was there, and, like, the whole thing, you know, just shut out, and she's, like, getting really, you know, I think she fired her sound guy after. But, no, she was actually a really good concert, you know? I mean, I really liked it. I had a lot of fun. But
I'm not going to question why you're at a Kesha concert, because I imagine it was fun. And that's really the point of going to concerts.
Yeah. It was right after Nelly.
Wonder who Kesha would vote into the Hall of Fame.
Interesting question.
Sounds like when Vern Lundquist asked asked Gary Danielson what Britney was doing during the game.
I can't possibly speak to what Kesha is interested in, but I'm hoping it's not Two Broke Girls.
Oh, shit.
That's really the only answer is hopefully it's not Two Broke Girls.
Big Bang Theory I could buy, though.
But at least that's, you know, entertaining enough. That's not, you know. Anyways, let's move on before we get to like an argument. So we took a look at 2014 already, you know, and put True Detective in over Dragon Age Inquisition, Whiplash, and Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones ended up being second place. So it was kind of like a TV kind of won out last year, what I considered to be a weaker video game year and a year of movies that there were a bunch of great ones, but none of them that I thought were like really special, like truly elite. Give or take how David feels about Nightcrawler.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess Boyhood did take 12 years to make, though.
It did take 12 years to make, Billy. That's very true.
And Nightcrawler
took longer
did not
to make
take
than that than the Great Wall of China.
Hey, Nightcrawler did not take 12 years to make. I'm just saying, you know, that's kind of the problem with that movie there.
Yeah, they made it too quickly. It took, you know, a normal production time. Only greatness can be made in 12 years.
But this year's a little interesting because I think as a huge video gamer, I think we're already looking at a pretty strong video game year. What's your laughter there, Seth?
No, I mean, I'm drinking my Dr. Pepper.
Oh, I heard a laugh there.
A laugh? No, this is actually a really good video game here.
Yeah, this is...
I mean, I'm not even joking. I mean, it's probably, gosh, the best one of the new gen we've had so far, definitely.
And I think, like, just from a pure standpoint, we'll get to it a little bit, like, it's just, in what's come out this month is already probably better than anything from last year, which says a lot about...
Which is strange, because Arkham Knight's been kind of getting middling reviews. I haven't played it yet. I'm going to. But, you know, it's a series that, to me, has two of the best games I've ever played.
Both of you guys really like The Witcher 3.
Witcher 3 is incredible.
Witcher 3 is solid. For one reason or another, I'm actually moving, so I have not had as much time to dip into it as I would have liked. But
No. You're lying. Your reasoning is you've been playing World of Warcraft all the time.
That too, but...
Don't deny it. That's why. I'm on Hearthstone. I see your battle net, you know?
No, I mean, I've actually put a good amount of time into Dark Souls 2, strangely enough.
What do you mean good amount of time? Like, how many bosses are you on?
I've gotten two, but that took me a lot of time, so...
It's a hard game. It's apparently an extremely difficult game, from what I've heard.
I don't know. It's kind of interesting, because, like, the problem with that intro, and this is obviously way off topic, but the problem with that intro is, like, you don't entirely know where you're supposed to go, so it's like... You're probably in, like, the wrong areas to a certain degree at the beginning, and that's one of the main issues.
And that's the thing, is I've been steadfast in saying I am not playing this game with a guide. And so that may or may not have been a bad choice, but for the moment, you know, like I said, I finally got the first two bosses down, and I've loved the game a lot.
Just use a guide for, like, the which areas to go to, because all I ever use it for is, like, I wanted the guide for which area I'm going to. I didn't use that for Bloodborne, though, just for... this game. I guess I did look at Bloodborne to make sure I didn't miss any optional areas, but now I'm sidetracking too far. Anyways, video games, great year. We've had some movies that maybe not be like the traditional critical acclaim, but they've been, you know, like essentially, okay, I'm just going to say it. Mad Max Fury Road was incredible. Best action we haven't seen in a long time.
No, I mean, yeah, that's definitely the leader right now if you're looking at midway through the year of movies that have come out. It's kind of separated itself from the rest of the pack so far, I would say. I mean, the rest of the movies, they've been okay. You know, Jurassic World was a fun movie. We've talked about that one. You know, Avengers Age of Ultron, I was disappointed, but, you know, a lot of people really thought
Fast
that was a pretty enjoyable
7.
Movie. Fast and Furious was a letdown.
Furious 7. The first one I've seen in a while. It actually made me feel bad.
It was a good time.
Okay, it made me feel bad for loving the franchise as much as I do. I'll put it that way.
And then San Andreas was a pile of vomit.
Oh,
and then
so
Spy
me,
was no, I didn't see Spy.
I think to me, like, this year, you know, 50 Shades of Grey is clearly the winner.
No,
but what it speaks from an artistic standpoint,
Hall
I
of Fame. We need to keep that away, even the words. but yeah, Mad Max definitely kind of has a lead going into the second half of this year. But there are some strong movies coming out later. We got The Revenant, which is another Iñárritu Iñárritu film, the guy who made Birdman. I can't remember. It's Alejandro, like. Iñárritu. we all like Birdman on the show, so it'd be interesting to see him take his take on a Western. Yeah, that's true. And, I mean, we have that one. We got the new Quentin Tarantino movie coming out, The Hateful Eight. That should be interesting. And there's a few more movies also there.
Southpaw. I mean, Southpaw is the one that's... You're probably going to hear about it again. That's all I'm
Yeah,
say.
I think so also.
So Southpaw is a movie that, like, when I, like, just in theory, right, this is a movie of, like, oh, I can't wait to see this, Jake Gyllenhaal, you know, he's going for his Weinstein Oscar role, I'm so excited, and then I saw the trailer, I'm like, well, I know the entire movie now, damn it, that's trailers nowadays, I know the entire movie based off the Southpaw trailer.
Yeah, it's like, everything is like a Game of Thrones, you know, previously on montage, and, oh, look, I know everything is going to happen now.
It's like, okay, Terminator, the new Terminator movie, Genesis, right? They tell you the big twist in the... Can you imagine how great that movie might have been if, like, we didn't know what the big twist was from the trailer?
Yeah, like, if Arnold Schwarzenegger popped up and we had no idea, that'd be... Oh!
Well, no, it's more the idea that, like, John Connor is actually not John Connor, and, like, you know, like it's...
They did the same thing with the last Terminator movie, Salvation, where they revealed that Sam Worthington's character was actually a Terminator during the trailer. Well, that would have made it a lot more interesting to find out he wasn't human.
But that movie wasn't salvageable regardless anyway, so.
But yeah, no.
I don't know. It was bad, but it wasn't as bad as the third Terminator, I don't think. But
yeah, probably not. Yeah. It's been a while since the third Terminator.
But yeah, year's looking good. Ant-Man's still going to come out, and, you know, I mean.
Everest. I think it's 999, 999.
Yeah, I want to see 999. That should be another interesting one. You got Chiwetel Ejiofor in there, who's one of my favorite actors, so that'll be cool. I mean... it definitely is a year that's shaping up for good movies. What's going to be hard for the movies, I think, for overall quality to top last year's movies. So that's something that you got to look at. Video games, which is taking a step forward. Television,
and like, we can't,
which seems
to
have taken a step back for sure. With
it's
the exception
really
of Better Call Saul.
Movies, all the critical acclaim, like Oscar movies, whether they're best or not. I mean, yeah, Grand Budapest Hotel came out and Whiplash came out, but a lot of those were like select theaters. I guess Grand Budapest Hotel wasn't select, it was wide release, but the idea is most movies tend to come out in the second half anyways, because that's like most fresh in the Oscar voters' minds. So I guess we'll get to that. Video games traditionally also come out in the fall, so we're going to be a lot of really fascinating, interesting games, including the game that will win Game of the Year by dictatorship vote by me in Fallout 4. Hopefully it doesn't come to that, but that is a real possibility.
Fallout 4, I'm definitely excited about that game. I mean, there's a few other ones. I mean, Halo 5 Guardians, hopefully that shapes up to be a good game as well. I mean, there's some other really good games coming out this year, too. I mean, anyone's up your alley, Seth?
I mean, I'm a guy who, if I've got money, I'll buy a game. And, you know, I mean,
way to help out here, Seth.
I mean, I'm more saying because of the way the industry is set up, there are very few bad games that are released. And there are true duds, just, but, you know, the amount of money it takes, you don't see that many ones that go through the filter and don't make it.
So, like, okay, take Watch Dogs. Watch Dogs is a disappointment. Destiny was a disappointment. There are definitely a lot of
disappointments. Yeah, no, I get you, man, but, you know, those games still sold copies and were successes, but it's the kind of thing that...
Hall of Fame here, though.
I know. I'm not sure. Fallout 4 is probably the only Hall of Fame-worthy title I see in the future, but...
I mean, Rainbow Six Vegas, that could be pretty cool.
Vegas was already released and is a great game. But,
it comes with Siege.
I meant to say Siege. I'm sorry. I really was trying to say Siege, but you have that. I mean, Battlefront, which... I mean, none of us are particularly excited about that game.
I'm excited about it, but, you know, it's probably not a Hall game.
No.
Battlefront 2 is.
Battlefront 2 is a Hall of Fame worthy game. That's true.
There's a lot to look forward to. I mean, like, I'm just saying, like, the Super Mario Maker is something that I think is going to be a lot of fun. You have Metal Gear Solid 5.
Are we going to be making maps for each other, try to kill each other, and, you know, broadcasting
absolutely,
it?
Yeah. Well, 100%, yeah. Grant, I'm the only one with a Wii U, I think, so that might be the issue there. But
if Billy's not too busy building entire cities in Fallout 4.
No, luckily, Mario
trying to rebuild civilization.
Don't worry. It comes out way before then. I'll be set there. Just Cause 3 looks incredible. That's coming out December 1st. But like a little, you know,
Guitar Hero.
The Guitar Hero Live, I don't care at all. The new controller just really throws me off. But I'm Rock Band 4. I'm very excited about, especially because it has all my DLC from the past. But let's get, you know, a little less.
Cuphead coming out this year?
Nah, it's next year. That game is entirely boss battles, by the way, guys. Did you know that?
No.
That game.
It looks pretty fun.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. I'm really excited. Let's get a little less, I guess, broad and, like, just kind of focus on what we've seen this year. Let's start off with video games. So, to me, there's three games I really want to mention from this first half, and I've played a lot. I've played, like, Ori and the Blind Forest, which is artistically a phenomenal, you know, creation. I had a lot of fun, but I wouldn't consider it, like, you know, the best of the year. Really good. You have games like, I haven't gotten Arkham Knight, so I can't really say too much. The main ones I want to focus on, I guess, like, Bloodborne, which is the latest from Software. It's a very well-made game. In a lot of ways, it's a unique, I guess, a concept compared to the other ones, but at the same time, spiritually the same. It's very phenomenally done. I don't know if it reached the same height of a game like Dark Souls, for example, you know, or it's probably better than Dark Souls 2, I'm not sure. You have The Witcher 3, which is probably my favorite game from this first year, concerns like what it does in size, scope, and probably the best written RPG I've played in a while. And then Dying Light's the game I want to mention, because I don't think it's as worthy as the first two I just mentioned, but from a pure gameplay standpoint, you don't get much more fun than what Dying Light represents.
Yeah, and there are a couple others you could throw in there, depending on your thoughts on Evolve. I mean, Evolve's one that has a
place. Oh, no, Evolve's crap. No. Evolve's a piece of crap. And you want to know why Evolve's a piece of crap? Because Evolve is, okay, guys, we dropped down, and now let's hunt the monster. There's the monster. Okay, he's gone. And if you spend the entire game hunting the monster, it sucks. It's not that much. And also the whole
thanks
game...
Thanks for taking all of the momentum about what I was going to say out.
All the microtransactions in that game, you can't unlock anything after a long time. I don't know.
I said depending on your thoughts, obviously. That's
negative.
You know, whatever. I mean, there are some re-releases. I think that Handsome Collection is one I'd probably
I don't care re-releases, though, as something I'd nominate here. Because I think, like I said, GTA 5 was the best game last year and 2013.
As far as I'm concerned, though, this is you've got Witcher 3 and a bunch of everything. Everything else with some distance. I like Mortal Kombat 10, but I still wouldn't put it in the same, you know, same breath as Witcher.
It's not even like the close to the germs that could possibly be in that breath, in my opinion. Like, and I like Mortal Kombat X a lot, but it's not. And I play way too much of that game, all things considered.
What about the Smite demo?
Smite's a game I have a hard time.
The Smite demo specifically.
Now, Smite's been out for since 2012 in beta, so it's kind of a I have a hard time separating it as a 2015 game.
Well, I mean, it came out technically, I guess, last year, the year it firstly originally came out, technically, you know, not including beta, just came out in full release, and it's now officially on. I think we're no longer in the beta on the Xbox One, or at the very least, I can get achievements now. I saw last night when David was mad at me for not watching True Detective, because I had to get my achievements that I've earned on Smite, so I was doing that, but the other one is Monster Hunter Ultimate 4, Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate. I played that game. It makes me kind of wonder, like, how good a game like Horizon is going to be. Because it seemed the game was kind of limited and repetitive on the 3DS, but still a lot of fun. So I mean, I'm interested to see what
Monster Hunter is, you know, a JRPG in the sense that it's a grind fest. I don't really like. Well, I lied. I like JRPGs, but I don't really like grind fests.
I'm with you.
Time spent does not equal difficulty, and a lot of game designers are, you know, unaware of that fact and unaware of that disparity, and it's kind of disappointing. But you know, Destiny's a good example.
Howdy, har har.
It's like The Order. I haven't played The Order, but there's no reason I'd want to.
The Order is like an 8-hour amazing campaign. That's it.
No. I actually, from what I've heard about that game, I've heard the campaign's really not that good at all. Like, the only really redeeming qualities of the game are A, the graphics, and B, the gameplay, the gun, like the pure gun shooting itself.
I think we've heard some different takes, because I've heard story, shoddy engine.
You have a friend who's entirely Sony. Like, you have a very biased Sony best friend who talks to you about this stuff. Like, that game had
calling out friends and family now on the show.
No, I mean, Billy, you have
a dad.
I'm not even saying, you know, my friend. I mean, I've read a good series of reviews that said that.
It's like a 60 on Metacritic right now, which is really bad. I'm not saying it's not, like I said,
60 to me shows a game terrible. That has some good things, and we're arguing about what the good things are.
Now, I'd say for video games, in terms of like what a video game is, 60 is really low, because how they give every game such generous scores. And to a certain degree, like, if we're not even in the 80s, then it's not even worth being mentioned in this conversation.
You mentioned it, though.
I'm just saying it's crap. I would say it's crap, and I might even Redbox that game.
So, before the end of the year, I need to play The Witcher 3, is what I'm hearing, before I can vote.
Yeah, I think
play Grand Theft Auto 5, but yeah.
Yeah, yes. Grand Theft Auto. Bloodborne's, I think Bloodborne's really good as well. Shovel Knight doesn't count, but I wish it kind of did, because I can mention it, where Shovel Knight's been...
Bloodborne's a PS4 only, right? Or did it come out for Xbox also?
It came out for PS4 only. I don't really consider, like, MLB the Show really worth mentioning this year, even though it's fun, but it's not, like, anything, like, new as what it is. I mean, pretty much, like, it's the best games this year, to a certain degree, that are not Witcher 3 and Bloodborne. I mean, you're looking at a bunch of games that...
Like I said, it's really a lot of games. And even Bloodborne, technically... I don't know. It isn't the same achievement that Witcher is to me.
It's just amazing what that game does from pure, like I said, in size and scope, the amount of time you spend in that game, but also just the, I guess, the writing of that game. It's not like the choices don't matter as much as I want to certain degree. It's actually kind of arbitrary what choices do matter, which you'll find out at the end. But, like, it's not like there's, like, very... Witcher 2, I thought, was a phenomenal way of they did the... There's two completely different stories based off a huge choice you make, but... I don't know, it's like, I was a little disappointed with Witcher 3 in some regards. For the most part, though, it's a lot of fun, it's a really well-written game, and it's probably the best RPG in a while, I guess, in that regard, since, like, Skyrim.
Yeah.
So thus far, we got, if the vote happened today, we'd be having The Witcher 3, Mad Max Fury Road, and a TV show, and then Game of Thrones Season 4.
You don't want to get into the you don't want to get into the movies a little bit more? I mean, obviously Mad Max Fury Road.
I mean, I think we've covered all the movies. We just we aren't in the prime movie release.
Right. It's still pretty early for movie-wise.
Well, so we are, because technically I think Imitation Game and, you know, there are a lot of movies that technically count for 2015, but you know, they were the previous Oscar cycle, so I mean, it doesn't really make sense to talk about them that much.
I mean, I never saw X back then, but that's a movie that a lot of people liked. There's the, and also, one thing we didn't mention yet, Kingsman was a lot of fun.
That one might find its way into the hall if I have a say in it, but...
I wouldn't go that far, but I definitely really liked that movie.
Yeah.
Haven't seen that one yet.
Hard, guys? Get hard with Will Ferrell.
All right, well, TV shows then?
Yeah, okay, so pretty much...
Can I start?
Yeah, go ahead. You go ahead.
To me, it's Mad Men. It's, as much as I, you know, as much as it was hard to watch sometimes, this Game of Thrones season was pretty, you know, good by general TV standards. Might not be a Hall nomination, but, you know, Game of Thrones season four alone will make the Hall, so it is what it is. And then I'm also going to throw in Better Call Saul.
Oh, absolutely.
By far the best, you know, 10 episode seasons that I've, you know, season that I've seen of TV.
Yeah, I think Better Call Saul is probably my leader as well. Finally finished Daredevil last night, so we got a storyline on the White Noise podcast. It's finally over. It's a concluded storyline of a story arc that's happened this podcast. And I liked it. I think it's actually, in terms of the shows I've seen this year, it's my second favorite so far. Like, it's, to me, it's Better Call Saul than Daredevil.
It's actually funny. It's a better show if you haven't seen the finale to me, but no, I agree. It's great. I loved it. It's definitely, you know, Marvel's – or that's DC. Is that DC or Marvel?
No, it's Marvel.
Marvel.
Gosh, I'm just drawing a blank. I was right, and then I doubted myself for whatever reason. No.
I mean, look, I could tell you're talking –
The series feels like a DC series, but it's Marvel.
It's okay. I could tell that you were a little off when you mentioned the Order – you know, you talked about the Order 1886 getting good reviews or something. You know,
I didn't say it got good reviews. I said the game – you know, I said that it was a good story, and that's exactly what I said.
But I actually heard the story's really bad, but that's irrelevant.
But yeah, Game of Thrones season 5, kind of, I was disappointed by that, but that would probably be my third favorite show that I've seen so far. Because, I mean, overall, even though I was heavily disappointed with some of the ways the stories went and some of the writing, the show is still, you know, as Seth has said, it's still a good show. It's not like this is a bad television show. It just hasn't, it did not sustain the quality that we've seen before in the series.
Yeah, it's not Two Broke Girls, you know, that's for sure, but
then House of Cards.
It just kind of sucks because, you know, some of the phenomenon, I don't think we saw any of those shows. Like, none of us watched Empire, and I don't care what you've read, but like I've read that Empire is something that could break the industry, and it's not just playing to a demographic when it does that.
No, it's okay. Empire, pretty much from my understanding, is Empire is got two great things for it. One, the phenomenon of it, which to me I'm not as interested in. Is that something you like a little more than me, I guess, because I don't really care as much about what everyone's doing on Twitter as the show's going on as much, you know, or what everyone's talking about as much. And two, like I said, it does play a lot to something that's not been done before on TV, but that doesn't necessarily make it, you know, the Hall of Fame show. But I can't say anything because
I like Walking Dead, and you know, if it were my hall, maybe Walking Dead would find a way into it, but you know, I mean, that was
season awesome. One has an argument, but
I thought this season was maybe, you know, maybe not better than season one, but I thought of the non-season ones, I mean, this was the best season of Walking Dead.
Should I watch all of the Walking Dead just so I can talk bad about it again? Because I don't want to until I see it all.
Well, it's better for you to watch it and then before you talk about it.
I mean, that's kind of where we are with this, is you can talk bad about it, but, you know, you hadn't seen it.
I like I said, I watched the first four and a half seasons, so, or three and a half. Four and a half, three and a half. I can't remember.
Probably
point is, I did watch a lot. Yeah, I did watch a lot before I quit. I have read all the comic books, so I was very invested in that.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, I mean,
it's the kind of thing that it doesn't belong in the same breath as some of these shows, but I mean, it's still in terms of, you know, what people are watching and what, you know, what qualifies as good TV. I mean, that's one that you think about and you talk.
I mean, to me, if you're looking at individual episodes, I mean, you got to go with either, you know, I liked the Wilson Fisk episode a ton in Daredevil.
I think episode,
like the one that's focused on him. I can't remember exactly which one it was, but that was excellent. But that one does not stack up to me as, you know, with Hard Home from Game of Thrones season 5 and 5-0 from Better Call Saul. 5-0 is probably my favorite episode that we've seen so far this year of television.
Well, the best three from Daredevil, I guess, it was like Condemned, which was 6, and that was one where Vladimir was working with Murdoch from Daredevil. You had 8, which is Shadows in the Glass, and then Speak of the Devil. That was the one. Yeah, he talks to the he has the long talks with the priest. He's the very opening is him, pretty much.
Yeah, that's true.
It's very pointed in its themes, and I think it for the most part. I mean, it's just a very cohesive episode, and just it's great. It's action packed. It kind of has this inverted story structure. I mean, it's just. You know,
is that the one where he goes into the hall like that? When he breaks into the compound and it has like that amazing choreographed fight scene with him fighting the different minions and kind of going through a stealth mode on his way to get the girl who got captured.
It's the one, like I said, it's the one Nobu, who's the guy in the Red Ninja.
Yeah.
Who went over there because he pretty much got convinced it was like a pretty much honor-worthy challenge for him.
Okay, yeah.
So he went over there. So you have the whole episode is pretty much him talking to the, at times talking to the priest, and I guess like a lot of morality, and has that very phenomenal monologue. What's the guy's name, Seth?
Which one?
The actor who plays the priest.
The actor who plays, ooh, I can't remember.
I had it last time, that's what I was wondering.
I did have it last time, but I also had the IMDb up. Let me pull it up. The priest, do you remember what his name was?
Absolutely not.
But still, I mean...
Is it Vincent D'Onofrio?
No.
Foggy. It's clearly Foggy.
Is it Deborah Ann Woll? Peter McRoby.
Yeah,
I guess. As Father Lampton.
Yeah. He had a phenomenal monologue there about what he said.
Fun fact, Peter McRoby... was, let me pull it up here, he was an Oscorp representative in Spider-Man 2. And he was also John Twist in Brokeback Mountain.
And after Oscorp fell apart, he ended up becoming a priest.
I mean, I guess, his life takes you in many paths, David. Yeah. You never know.
He becomes a priest and ends up becoming associated with another superhero.
Yeah, but I think, for the most part, to me, it's like Better Call Saul... I'm not going to say I'm surprised because it's still Gilligan.
I'm still surprised that
it was surprising that it had the head of steam that it had, and just right off the bat, it was high quality after high quality. And this is, again, without actually looking and having full collection, but I think there was nothing below like a B. There was nothing below a B.
No, sure.
The entire season was high quality. I agree with you on that. I think 5-0's like...
5-0's an A+, and there are several other A's, but
5-0 stacks up with the best of Breaking Bad, and that's something I wasn't.
And if it stacks up with the best of Breaking Bad, it's the best of television. It should just, go without saying.
No, I completely agree. I mean, probably. I feel like Jonathan Banks is going to at least be nominated for an Emmy. I would hope
and should win
for that. I hope he should win, in my opinion. But hopefully, he gets nominated. And maybe Vincent D'Onofrio honestly probably deserves to be nominated too.
Fun fact.
He won't, though, because of the industry.
my parents used to work with D'Onofrio's cousin.
Oh, really?
So it's actually kind of funny when he was...
Is he a scary man?
I don't think so. I mean, he's a, thick Italian man like you'd expect.
So that's exactly how you'd imagine his cousin to be. Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm trying to think. What was the big thing? Okay, yeah, he was the alien in Men in Black.
And, oh, really?
It's the kind of thing that's one of the reasons why my parents really freaked out over Men in Black was because, they knew the guy's cousin. And now, what is D'Onofrio today? He's in Jurassic World. He's in Daredevil.
He's everywhere.
And a couple other things.
And I think with TV shows, it's safe to say, there's a lot of shows that, I have not gotten to Louis season 5 for whatever reason, and that's a shame for me. That's a show I really like. I haven't watched The Americans, and... That's another show that, is like one of the highest critically acclaimed. And then I guess the other last one is I'm going to watch Silicon Valley Season 2 really soon, probably. And
I totally forgot about that. That one was great, too.
Astronaut TV, there's so much TV on, it's hard to really, look at the entire package. So it's almost like there's certain things to focus on.
The fact that a show like The Americans isn't always discussed is kind of a good example of that. Because I've read all the same zeitgeist you have, and they say that The Americans is the best show on TV. And I'm just like...
Or at least Greenwald loves it.
Well, Greenwald loves it, but he's not the only one.
Oh, no, I know. I'm saying it's definitely Greenwald's favorite, and I don't hold many TV characters as high esteem as Greenwald. I know David absolutely loves Andy Greenwald.
Which is
I like the fact that he's been supporting
like
True Detective Season 2.
No, that was the sarcasm. Yeah, he doesn't like... David was very upset about Greenwald last year. He sent me all these angry text messages and stuff about how much he hates this guy for saying this stuff.
I know. It's actually funny. I go to Grantland often. I don't really like their critics that much. I think Wesley Morris is... I don't like him that much, but... he's intelligent, but I just don't like him as a critic. I don't know.
I don't like their movie critics at all, for the most part.
I'm the ultimate critic of critics.
Well, aren't we critics by talking about, this Hall of Fame and, what we consider?
Yes. I mean, we're being critics, but we're talking about what we like, not necessarily what we consider.
So we brought up all the TV this year. I mean, are we going to... Nominate.
How does it stack up so far to Game of Thrones Season 4, would you say?
I think Better Call Saul is very close, but I think I would say Game of Thrones Season 4 over it because Better Call Saul was a phenomenal intro season, and I think as good as it was and as high as it steam, Game of Thrones is benefiting from one that you had the three seasons before it, so some of the interaction between Tyrion and his father or, you know, like, it's just, the storylines were too well, you know, developed into season four. Season four is kind of like, in my opinion, the end of the arc from season one to season four in a lot of ways. And that's, and especially from that genre and the scope of what it's doing, I have a hard time seeing it being better, but Better Call Saul is close enough that, like, it's a good argument.
And do you think Better Call Saul is the best of the stuff this year we've talked about so far?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, better than Mad Max and better than The Witcher 3?
I think it'd be a very close argument, because I think I do like Mad Max Fury Road possibly more, but I don't know.
Mad Men actually is another one that maybe we could throw in, just because it,
we'll have to catch up and watch that.
It ended, and I thought the I thought it kind of ended really good.
Yeah, I'll have to burn through Mad Men once I finish Parks and Rec, I guess.
Yeah, I thought this last season was actually really good. So,
no, we'll check it out definitely.
Even if it was mostly goodbye, and like it was a whole season of goodbyes, but you know, it still kind of ended extraordinarily. I think
the end of an era.
Yeah.
And Witcher 3, phenomenal game. I still wouldn't put it over probably since, like, this isn't still the game that, like, it's not a top 10 game, I guess, I played recently. It's not like a, you know, Fire Emblem Awakening, am I right, Seth?
Yeah, that game is amazing.
But it's still really good. I think Fallout 4 is the one that I'm going to be irrational about and not be able to think anything is worthy over it at all, anything, you know?
That's going
to
be tough for you if it gets between Game of Thrones Season 4. For its final chance of getting in, unless we do a historical nomination.
Season 4 will get in eventually.
Yeah, no, I'm not worried. Especially because, you know me, Fallout's my favorite.
There will be a bad stretch of TV, and Game of Thrones 4, you know, Season 4 will be there, sticking out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, it'll just be like, we have, you know, we're going to keep nominating TV shows, and at a certain point, it's going to get in because it's high enough quality that it's going to get over. Like, I mean, that's like, unless we talk about, I want to put The Wire in still, but, like, we can't do that at the moment.
Well, we can't do Mad Men either, so, you know, don't.
Billy.
Don't make me feel like crap.
Billy. David.
What did Seth. I do this time?
Wait.
Kyle.
I think to a certain degree, because of the lack of, there's some things we have to catch up on. TV is kind of hard to say. I guess, like I said, video games to me is Witcher 3, movie, Mad Max Fury Road, but once again, not much has come out in that regard. And TV, we can't really say, but
I feel confident that Mad Max it'll be in contention. I mean, I really did enjoy that movie. Well, I'm not sure if it's, you know, as good as maybe the best of last year.
I reserve my right to maybe turn it down.
Sure. I mean,
I reserved the right to vote with David. That's cool to the Hall of Fame, and that's actually a good segue into what we're going to be doing here. We're now going to put more in the Hall of Fame, kind of fill it out a little bit from a pure historical standpoint. And the way it works is you have to get two of the three votes from us, but each vote should be taken with high esteem, high care. This is not something we want, just anything to make this Hall of Fame. So looking at the past, like, if one of us hasn't seen the show, then it's almost like you have to kind of convince or play the game or movie or whatever. And it's kind of a lot
which
of convincing
possible.
In cases.
I talked my way into Parks and Rec last season.
No. Parks and Rec, I'm not sure I ever... I didn't see all of Parks and Rec, but I've seen 70, 80% of it probably. And I love that show, so I was more than fine to vote in. But it's like, you know,
watching it at the moment, so I was very much enjoying it.
He was watching it while
while
we were doing the podcast. Like, we could hear the background noise.
Yeah. I was sitting there laughing just constantly, and everyone's going, "What are you doing, David?"
Watching Parks and Rec. Chris Pratt just did something funny.
So it's interesting, you know. Like, I think Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, that was a movie Dave hadn't seen. We generously deferred it, but I think, you know, that's kind of been turned down at this point.
No. I mean, I still haven't watched it yet, and I'm going to. I will bring in a decision. I just have a. Where do I find this thing? I guess I have to go. I went to Redbox.
Your local movie stop, man. Do you remember how when they sold DVDs at stores? They still do that.
What are you talking about? What are DVDs? Is it not on Netflix?
Remember when we had
it
in our house for movies?
Remember Blockbuster? No, that wasn't real.
That was a dream.
I don't know, man. What was it? It was like Hollywood Video.
Hollywood Video.
I don't know. I really did enjoy Blockbuster. It was a great experience of going in there and looking through all of the videos.
Who didn't love? My thing is, it wasn't even the movies. Grant, I
it
watched
was the
Shelby,
journey
like,
and the experience of being
was,
in
yeah,
Blockbuster.
Like, the Goosebumps, like the different movies they had there. I there's so many like little dumb like Nickelodeon things I found as a kid that I really liked from like books or whatever. Like, you found all the obscure direct to movie videos you'd only get.
That's
there.
What I enjoyed doing. I enjoyed going there and looking at like the B horror movie covers and like the titles of them. I just thought all that stuff was just really funny.
We might have to do a separate podcast about like Disney straight to channel Disney movies. Like, you know, like the 13th year, the luck of the Irish. There's some really good stuff, man. The Lizzie McGuire movie.
I always loved, like, every single, like, Disney, like, either direct-to-video or just, like, they would air it only on the channel, you know, movies they made, like, My Date with the President's Daughter and stuff, you know, like, I always loved all of those as a kid for some reason, but...
Well, this really has explained why we're, you know, we're such different people, you know. Direct-to-video Disney movies, and I'm looking at, you know, obscure B-horror movies that are terrible.
Oh, yeah, don't get me wrong.
That
you
are just absolute
them,
crap.
You
watch them. You're just trying to be mightier than us. It's cool.
I'm actually, I don't know. I think I think mine are a little bit stupider, honestly. But...
Well, I think, like, you saw, like, Tremors 2, 3, and 4, which are all, like, you know, direct to
Yeah, exactly. Or, like, old Japanese Godzilla movies.
Anyways, I think, you know, we should get to the, I guess, historical nominations. Before we do, I'm going to quickly go over what happened last time.
Previously on White Noise.
Seth Juniac nominated Parks and Rec. Billy and Seth said yeah. No, okay, but seriously, though, Parks and Rec, Superstar Wars Melee, Fellowship of the Ring, Breaking Bad, Fallout 3, Assassin's Creed 2, The Dark Knight, and Friday Night Lights TV show. That's what's in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. David hasn't seen it. Still technically in deferred land. I imagine it won't get in, but you never know. Moving on, though, we each got to nominate two things, I think, is what we decided on. I'm going to let you start off, Seth, though.
What? Oh, I get to start off?
Yeah, you started last time, so I figured you might as well, you know, you're the last... You haven't nominated something the longest since, you know, me and David.
All right.
I think it makes sense you start off.
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and go with my...
The pick is in.
No. No.
we'll go with my movie first.
I say no.
It's actually funny. I'm not sure what this what y'all's reception of this movie is going to be, but I've decided to nominate Iron Man, the movie.
Mm.
Yes.
I think that it's the one that got the whole Marvel Cinematic Universe started. I mean, as much as you can talk about the, you know, Tobey Maguire Spider-Mans, I think that the Iron Man's the one true engine.
Oh, it's Spider-Man's not really in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but anyway,
it's the one that kind of came from left field, but it's also, you know, it restarted Robert Downey Jr.'s career. I mean, it's just so much good things came from this movie. And, you know, even if I probably like Don Cheadle in a vacuum better, I think Terrence Howard did really good as Rhodey. Gwyneth Paltrow did a good job. Jeff Bridges, a truly terrifying villain. I mean, this is just a movie that, in terms of how to do a superhero movie and how to do an origin story, I don't think anyone's done it better since. And so Iron Man's my nomination.
Well... There's definitely a lot of background moving there, I guess I can hear some mic. I guess someone has a lot of thoughts.
Nah, my cat's playing with the cord.
I'm shaking with rage.
I'll let you go first, Dale, on your thoughts on this.
I love this movie. I think it's a good pick. I mean, if I'm thinking about, like, my, you know, top four or five superhero films, Iron Man's definitely up there. It is in my top five. I would say it still stands up to me as the best Marvel movie we've had so far in the MCU. It's the one that started it all. I mean, I loved it. It was something fresh, kind of a fresh, more lighthearted take on superhero movies since, you know, the Nolan trilogy had started. And so it was nice to see that. It was a great starting point for the MCU. Robert Downey Jr. was excellent as Tony Stark. I love Jeff Bridges. He's one of my favorite actors. I mean, I love The Big Lebowski. So it was fun to see him in a role and see him kind of come back. Really, two actors who kind of had careers that were in a slump with Jeff Bridges and, you know, Robert Downey Jr., and both of them delivered and really well-directed film. I can't remember the director's name exactly.
It's John Favreau. He's
I thought it was.
Done,
I thought
he's
it
actually
was
done a lot
Favreau.
Of stuff, and yeah. You know, you probably recognize him as an actor.
Yeah, and I mean, I thought it was a good script. I mean, it was Robert Downey Jr. and the way he delivered those lines. I mean, he is Tony Stark, and when you think of personalities and actors that connect to a character, I think he's up there with, you know, with some of them, like Michael Keaton as Batman, as a guy that you're going to associate with that character forever. I mean,
No, we gotta keep that, Seth. I like the drama of your cat, you know, disrupting everything.
But yeah, he'll be immortal with that role, and I'm gonna say yes.
Okay, so first of all, I want to mention the fact that, remember, Terrence Howard was in this movie in the role that Don Cheadle, you know, later got. I just want to point that out.
That's true.
So think something that we should think about. It doesn't really matter. I think Iron Man is the best, like, Marvel. Like I have an argument for the Avengers over Iron Man. But, like, it's close enough that you could make a good argument. This is the best movie Marvel's made, period. It's definitely the best in terms of, like, you take one superhero and here's their story. it's definitely the best in that regard. You're right, there's probably not a more perfect, I guess, marriage in Robert Downey Jr. and Tony Stark. And I everything about this movie was a hit to me. You know, the whole opening is one of the most interesting, you know, superhero openings I've seen. In terms of like what the origin story within the movie is. The whole plot was great, and then it ended essentially with a mic drop, in my opinion, with the on Iron Man.
Yeah, it was something you just don't see in a superhero film. The guy revealing his identity in the first movie at the end.
Yeah, and I'm all for this because Iron Man, like I said, I think I'm a little cynical. I think sometimes when it comes to the genre.
Yeah.
Not in terms of like a, you know, I don't want to be good. I think they're lower movies. It's just I think sometimes I don't always enjoy them as much as maybe I should. Or maybe Age of Ultron just wasn't that great. I'm not entirely sure, but I think Iron Man stands as like the one movie that I can definitely say I'll always enjoy when I see it.
Yeah, I mean,
it's definitely the
most Iron Man's one. The reason we get all jaded about the other Marvel movies because it was so good.
I mean, the beginning with him like making his suit. I mean, that scene was just amazing. When I was a kid watching that, I was, you know, gasp. I mean, it was awesome. I think it came out on my birthday too, so I got to see it on my birthday. That was awesome.
And you know, it also kind of has some of that, you know, real world criticism and stuff outside of the lines. I mean, it's the kind of thing, like I said, the biggest knock on this is that it's not Don Cheadle, and even then Terrence Howard is pretty good.
I actually think I preferred Terrence Howard in the role, which is weird because I'm a big Don Cheadle fan. Like, I was kind of bummed when he ended up, you know, giving up the role to Don Cheadle.
Cheadle's a more comedic role for sure. Terrence Howard's probably a little more dramatic at times. Like, I think like if you're going with like the high end dramatic side of it, Howard's better. But for comedy, Cheadle's better.
Really quick, totally random from left field. 2015 TV. We didn't even mention Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
I can't say I have interest, even though I'm sure it's great.
Sorry.
Like I'm sure it's worth watching.
We don't have to put that much into it. I just forgot to mention it.
All right. Well, listen. I say yes. David says yes. You know it. So. Iron Man's in the hall. We're going to get an awesome poster for this one, which, by the way, I forgot to mention that. The main reason we're doing this is for everything that makes Hall of Fame, we're going to get an awesome poster, because that's actually the only important thing about this, in my opinion.
Yeah, which is why Mad Max Fury Road has a good chance, because I love that poster.
All right, so, David, you're up.
All right, well, I'm actually convincing myself to go two video games today. I might go a movie. I have a movie I'm considering, but there are
two. No. If anyone's going to video games, I had two I really want to. I guess actually I'll let you go because I think you're going to put one of the ones I want in. So go ahead. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to start off and I'm going to say Mass Effect 2. We've talked about this at length together about how we like the Mass Effect series. And me, Mass Effect 2 is my favorite Mass Effect game of the series. I mean, incredible character development, incredible dialogue. I mean, the science fiction atmosphere, the improved combat system, which still did not get as good as it was in the third one, but compared to the first one, the gameplay elements, I think, are a huge step above and a lot more refined, so it's a more playable game. The villains of the game, I mean, probably my least favorite, but it's okay because of the side stories, the character development, the gameplay, I mean, the final mission where you have to... when you have to get everything, you know, done correctly or else your characters are going to die. I mean... Shepard can actually die in the second game in this series, even though he will come back in the third one. I mean...
How'd they do that, by the way? I'm kind of curious. Like, what would they do if he died and then you replace him?
I think because he dies in the first one. He dies in the second, the third one anyways, I believe. Doesn't the ship blow up and they, like, bring him back?
That's the second one. Begin the second one.
Oh, okay, that's the second one? Oh, I thought the third
and
one
And you have
was
Joker, like, on that, like, kind of not the best done scene with Joker walking really slowly on the ship.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, I really like this game. I'm in love with the characters. I mean, it's just a prime game. I mean, some of the best characters you're going to find. Great science fiction, great role-playing game. A lot of customization. There's a few annoying elements in here, but this is a game I'm always going to remember and I'm going to hold dear from this franchise.
The success of this is what makes the disappointment of 3 a reality. I mean, this is... To me, I mean, I'm just going to cut the crap. It's a yes. This is, you know, a great game for all the reasons you just mentioned. And I think Mass Effect 2 is, you know, unadulterated the best of the best installation. And I agree with everything you've said. And even then, the design of it, you know, it's centered around this suicide mission. Everything you do is, you know, to prepare for that, you know, and it just kind of does a good job about, you know, making that a forethought. And character, you know, to go back to the characters, I mean, Elusive Man, I actually disagree. I think that, you know, with him as the main villain, that's kind of, you know, really interesting, even if he isn't a
villain.
Sure,
Yeah, if you use him as the main villain, I agree. The collectors, to me specifically, are the parts that maybe not quite as compelling as Saren.
Okay, but you can't say... Okay, so I think, like, we've talked about this game, I think, specifically more than any other game, I guess, off-air. And, first of all, it's obviously a yes, in my opinion. I think Mass Effect 2 is far away the best of the series, which is a phenomenal trilogy, which is kind of... In a nutshell, I think the trilogy is better as a sum than each individual part, except 2 is a phenomenal individual part. And
we might get a trilogy poster.
But the Elusive Man wasn't a villain in the second game. So you can't say he wasn't a villain in the second game. The third game, as a villain,
device,
it was done.
In terms of a plot device, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I love the way they did, Martin Sheen did the Elusive Man. The whole portrayal of him was phenomenal, I think, in the second game. And the third game, they kind of ruined slightly his character because they just kind of rushed into the, he's a cartoony villain now, in my opinion, a little bit. But in the second game, as a standalone, I love what they did with him. And I think
he was like a morally gray character who was kind of helping you out with these missions. And I like
what made this game special to me is there's probably not a single other game, period, that has a good of a character. And it's a lot of it's Bioware, but there's not a single game that has a better character study of, like, you getting to interact with each individual character, learning them. Because it is essentially one giant suicide mission where you gather up the biggest and baddest people in the universe, and then you bring it for the suicide mission, and then you actually have to make real tough decisions for them to live, or to not mine on some stupid planet forever.
And a lot of it's based on the humanity of the characters, too, which is, and you know, if you, depending on how deep you get into the lore, I mean, there's actually some really fascinating discussions and really fascinating, you know, character studies, like Legion, for instance, you know, the robot with, like, lots of humanity. I mean, it's really interesting.
In fact, every character can kind of, like, one-up. It's like, okay, Legion's the most interesting character. No, wait, Thane's the most interesting character. No, wait, Grunt's the most interesting character. And, like, you're every character could be possibly the best character.
Except for Miranda. We can agree she sucks.
No. Miranda's good within 2 and 3. They kind of, like, I don't know.
Yeah, you
like
get to bang her on an elevator. But, yeah, like, you got to look at, I mean, Garrus, obviously, is a... Yeah, kind of love his kind of dynamic with Shepard. Yeah, exactly. And Morden. We forget Morden. Morden might be the best. I mean,
I think Morden and Garrus are my favorite too. But I think each character has a certain argument that it could be the best, and not many games have the. Okay, well, you know, Garrus is your ultimate bro. Morden's one of the most tragically compelling characters. Legion and Grunt kind of make you question, I guess.
You got Samara too, I believe is her name.
Samara's meh compared to.
She's probably the most meh, I would say, of the group.
Well, Jacob's the most meh, but...
Jacob's kind of cool, though. I mean, he was kind of a cool... The way he gets to be kind of buddy-buddy with Shepard by the end of that game.
But it's a yes. It's a yes.
Yes. This is a great game.
Team Jacob.
Billy.
Okay, well, so I have a tough decision here. I either can do the movie that I'm very fascinated to hear you guys' opinion on, or the video game I know you guys are going to say yes, and for the sake of drama, I'll do the video game first. So there's 2 games I want to nominate. One's Bioshock, but I'm not going to do Bioshock, even though I want to, because that's a piece of art, phenomenal game, because there's another game that I think is a must-have in this hall. And one, Portal, and if Portal was the only game in the series, I would think it's hall-worthy, because Portal is such an amazing game for what it is. But thankfully, Valve came out with Portal 2, which is not only still the most, like, you know, innovative, interesting gameplay of any game I've ever played, it completely destroys everything else in the genre of puzzles, but it's also one of the funniest games I've ever played, and it's probably the best-written game I've ever played. And it's amazing to me how good that game is, and if it wasn't for, I guess, like, the scope and length of Fallout 3, Portal 2 would probably be my favorite game of last gen.
Yes. No, but there's not much more that needs to be said about this.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's one thing I remember about this game that I loved, is just how it kind of just takes a complete 180 on you, seems like halfway through the game, how when you're getting, you're going to, you know, fight GLaDOS again, and you have, what's the name of the guy?
Wheelie's
been your helper for the whole game, and you get to fight GLaDOS, and then, you know, the game just takes a complete 180. You get out of the whole puzzle atmosphere that you start out with in the game. And you have a typical kind of portal puzzle rooms that you go through and having to solve those things.
It's also,
and you get flung into, like, just, you know, the background of the facility. I mean, it's...
Let me tell you why I love, I guess, not only the characters, like, Stephen Merchant's Wheatley, he's phenomenal. Ellen McClain's phenomenal as a GLaDOS. He's a fun one. J.K. Simmons is Cave Johnson. It's like I kind of forgot about. And it's just... Cave Johnson, in a nutshell, is one of the best characters I think I've played in most games, and he's third on this game.
Yeah.
I mean, purely from the standpoint of a Valve game does belong in the hall, but this is one of the best games, as you said, of its generation, and I mean, it's a top 5 game that I've played, and I'm going to say yes, absolutely. I mean, I love this, I love the genre, I love what Portal 1 did, and Portal 2 one-upped it and added even a better story.
And also, I don't know if you guys played it, but Portal 2 has the best co-op experience I've probably ever had in my life.
I've never played the co-op, but I can only imagine
it's
how
that
awesome
good.
It is.
Because it's four portals. And you have to work together and time things like perfectly. Like, you have to like be shooting portals.
Isn't it like a whole separate group of levels?
Yeah, you're playing as the two, Peabody and Atlas. Like on the two co-op, it's really
playing
fun.
Playing as
it's
the two
really
droids?
Special.
Or
yeah, and there's nothing more fun than killing your friend on purpose when they're supposed to completely trust you.
Yeah.
And you
like
still have
flying
GLaDOS
him
tank.
Into an incinerator or something insane like that.
Well, like, one of the levels, it's actually kind of fun, like, the way the level designs for co-op is, one of the levels, you guys have to run into each other in the air to stop your momentum. Like, this is the only way to reach one of the platforms, which is takes an infinite amount of time if you don't know, like, if you never consider that idea. And it's just, it's ingenious in that regard, but it's also, it'd be a 10, in my opinion, just on the single player, but then you have the co-op.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is a Hall of Fame game. It's really a no-brainer.
I have nothing really to add just because, I mean, it is. It's a perfect game.
Alright, I think we're going to have our third video game here. Seth, you have a video game that's going to be very interesting, apparently.
Yes. The game I'm going to nominate is The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. The point of contention is that, well, why aren't you going to nominate the best one? I am nominating the best one. Not Ocarina of Time, but Majora's
Mask.
Well,
that you can't do Ocarina of Time anyways because it came out before.
Exactly, so it works off in my favor a little better. And I will admit, maybe some of the Majora's Mask love is coming from almost spiritually as it's, almost spiritually as a follow-up to Ocarina of Time, and I hope that kind of helps its candidacy a little bit, but Majora's Mask is, to me, it's basically, it took everything about Ocarina of Time, added the engine, they kind of fine-tuned it, it kind of runs a little better, and also in terms of, the universe of a game and the rules of how your game is supposed to be played, the time travel element, while some people might argue that it's, a little complicated and convoluted, I'd argue that it makes it very interesting. It, a lot of, when you think about games and game design, here's the obstacle, how do I approach this obstacle? To me, Majora's Mask does an excellent job, by adding that time element, it, really changes how you approach obstacles and how you think about the world around you, and to me, that makes it a better game than Ocarina of Time, which, the Ocarina of Time, it is this big world, it is, but for the most part, it's a very linear story. Majora's Mask, while also a very linear story, it kind of tricks you into not being a linear story better than Ocarina of Time does.
You ever play this game, David?
I have not played this game, but I actually am extremely well-educated. I've seen people play the game, and I've, done a lot of research on the storyline and all the research on just how this is a little bit of an oddball game. And really interesting to me. I love it kind of delves in some existentialist themes outside of the actual game. I mean, they don't really delve too far into them, but it's kind of all in the background. I mean, I've read all the strange fan theories about what happens in the end of this game or where this game actually takes place. Is Link actually dead the whole time? I mean, kinds of interesting things that I've read about this game. And I mean, I'm fascinated by that. I think I'm going to maybe step back and not vote on it just because I don't think I can give it my due diligence. I want to say yes, but I haven't played the game, if you know what I mean.
Well, I have played the game, luckily. I've played it. So it's kind of strange. This is one of those games where, obviously, I loved Ocarina of Time as a kid. Tried to play this game as a kid. Could absolutely not do it, but I knew of this game. I've always wanted to play it, so I went going back. I think like 2 summers ago, I actually have the N64 cartridge, which is a very rare cartridge to have. I have like the golden one. I don't know if they're all golden, but I have the golden one. And what this game is very interesting is there's not a single other game, period, remotely like this game. In terms of, like, you'd explain it, but I'm going to go a little further into the way a time element works is, essentially, if you have zero guide, this is going to be a frustratingly rewarding game because you have to essentially figure out how to get to the temple. There's 4 main temples, 4 different areas. You have to figure out how to get to there without any kind of instruction, and you only have 3 days. And you can slow down time, which will make it, a lot easier of a journey.
Well, yeah, like, what is it? 72 hours roughly parses
yeah.
to 2 hours?
2 hours
with slowed down time?
I'm actually about to look at that. How long is 72 hours Majora's Mask? It's about, yeah, so it's, you say it's two hours in a real, if you have the slowdown when it's 2 hours, right? So essentially you have 2 hours with the slowdown time, which I didn't even know about at first, to figure out the objective. And once you got to the temple, then you have a save point there and you can, teleport to the temple. And it was made a lot easier.
Then
but if you've
got
ever
two
tried
hours to clear the temple.
But if you've ever tried to do the temple on like day 2.5 or day 3, it really is a phenomenal, like, fast game, like time crunch to figure it out in time. And it's, I love this game. The side quests are probably the best side quests of any game I've ever played. This is, I can't say like more Ocarina of Time, but it's probably the second best Zelda game, period. It's a phenomenal game. I love what it does, and I think the Stone Temple Tower is the best tower of any Zelda game. My only issue with this game is Great Bay Temple can go to hell.
That's actually my latest playthrough. I'm saved right after I beat the Great Bay.
Because it's Water Temple, as frustrating as it is, there's only one real problem with it, and that was the boots. You know, that was it. Once they fixed it in the 3DS version, it wasn't that bad. Great Bay Temple is a genius design. That literally is the most frustrating thing of all time.
Yeah. The water current adjusting, right? That's
because you can't swim. Like, the swimming in this game is so bad compared with, and the combination with the water current adjusting, it's oh my god, I hate that.
It's actually funny. I don't remember having that many issues with it. It also might be because I played it as a 20-year-old. But,
yeah.
You know. But the other thing, too, really quick, that I love about it, I talked about game design. Talk about a constant reminder of what you're fighting for. If at any time you're playing this game and you look up in the sky, you quickly remember why you're playing this game and why you're rushing through and why you're trying to save the world. Because the moon is coming and getting you.
And also, like,
I love Ocarina of Time. You know, it is the primordial video game, but Majora's Mask takes all of that and makes it better, in my opinion.
For it's, I think at this exact moment, right, if I had to go back and play one of them, I think in a lot of ways Majora's Mask stands up a little better because it's not as... Ocarina of Time was so much about with the open world for that time, what it did for that time. But at this exact moment, Majora's Mask is probably the more fun game to play. And I think there's two things I want to mention before we move on, because this is, like, yes, obviously for me. One, this is better than Mass Effect 2, which we already talked about in my opinion, so obviously this is a huge lock for me. But two, Skull Kid is such a tragically interesting character, which is the main villain. And the encounter on the moon is probably the most memorable thing I can think of from the entire N64, you know, generation, like, of games, like, in terms of, like, what you do at that place and what all the different tasks you have, and the way you had to collect all the masks, or the way you had to, like, have all the boss masks on the moon. Like, also that boss battle, when he goes into, like, the long-legged, weird music section where he's, like, dancing, I can't say I've ever seen anything like that in a video game.
Yeah.
Is Skull Kid Link? That's the question that I want to leave. That's the conspiracy theory I've always
made. And there's also a lot of fun rumors. Like, if you want to, like, look up, like, whatever happened to the Deku, you know, Butler's son. And, like, which is, it's amazing, this random side character, the Deku Butler's son, you know, like, he's, like, this very tragic character, Deku Butler.
Well,
like,
and even then, there's the kid in the, you know, old Clock Town. There's, like, the kid and her older sister, where, you know, if you talk up to him on different days, you kind of see, the, you know, the mother note, or the older sister knows the world is ending, the kid doesn't, and you can kind of, you know, you talk to the, you know, talk to the older sister, and, you know, it's just kind of troubling, just kind of tracking, you know, someone who doesn't know the world is ending and someone who does but doesn't say anything to protect the daughter. It's kind of,
you also
it's
have
really
the,
interesting. And
one of the best love stories I've seen in a video game. which, yeah, like, it's, I don't want to say too much because it's all spoilers.
Yeah.
But it's, play this game if you haven't played it.
Yeah, it's great. And it might be a little tough to play without a guide, but, you know, I mean, it makes it a little more of a memorable experience.
It's endearing that way, I guess. Yeah. Oh, you can borrow my 3DS or something, David.
So you played it on 3DS?
Is that the... I have it.
I played it on N64 emulator, and I'm about halfway through it on DS.
Oh, so I can get it on my phone, basically, is what you're saying?
No, emulator.
Or used it
on
your computer.
Yeah, emulator, I mean N64.
Yeah.
An N64 emulator, which I'm sure you could get one on your tablet. It just won't be any good.
No, I wouldn't think so. But yeah, it's a game that's on my list of games to play just because I think I'd be fascinated by some of the, like, it's interesting because it's a game that's, you know.
To me, sometimes we think about games as, you know, quite literally, I'm the hero and I need to save the world. Other times, you know, I think that we need to think of games as, you know, storytelling and individual storytelling. And to me, the great thing about Majora's Mask that kind of goes beyond what the actual game and the rule is that, as we've kind of hinted at, it explores the theme of, you know, grief and loss and preparing for the end of the world. And it's, to me, there, you know, so there's kind of the stories that are told and some of the symbolism present. I mean, it's just kind of goes a great deal beyond what the typical game would be.
Yep,
well put.
And like I said, it's the best side quest of any game I've ever played, period.
I just don't know how you get all the side quests done in time before the the world ends.
Well, the thing is, you do everything, like, you don't do everything in, like, one, because what happens is, by completing the side quest, you either get, like, you get an item, like a mask, which if you get all the masks, you get this special reward at the end. But you're not doing all the side quests in one run through. You're having to learn about the different things, and then you do it all.
Like I said, it's designed brilliantly in that it introduces you to this mechanic, and then, you know, there's quite literally too much for you to do in one day's time. So it does a great job of basically saying, you know, okay, here's the rules. What are you going to do now?
That's an interesting idea.
Let's move on here. As much as I love talking about this game forever. Also, in comparison to Wind Waker and Ocarina of Time, but...
Wind Waker's interesting. I'd probably take Majora's Mask, but anyway, let's move on.
Wind Waker's amazing, though. But anyways, so David, it's your turn.
Well, I'm going to go with a movie, since we've gone video games pretty heavy today. And I'm going to go with a movie that I have no idea if it's going to get voted in or not. So this is going to be interesting. I'm going to go with Nicholas Winding Refn's Drive. I really enjoyed this movie. It's very... It's a kind of a weird movie, extremely stylistic, kind of more style over substance here. Some strong performances around. I mean, a very interesting performance. It's kind of controversial from Ryan Gosling. No one really, he doesn't have much dialogue, but I think what he does with his physical performance and the idiosyncrasies of the characters is pretty incredible. I mean, it's got our friend Bryan Cranston in it, and Albert Brooks is incredible. Carey Mulligan's very good. Nicholas Winding Refn's touch on it, I mean, is a great director with a lot of interesting style. It's kind of an anti-movie in a way, like from the tropes that you would expect in Hollywood nowadays. It doesn't really have, you know, the typical sort of, you know, the typical sort of structure of a car action film. I mean, it's very artsy. It's very outside of the norm. I really enjoy it, and to me, it was the best movie that came out that year. Like, when I've made a big list of top five movies going back all the way to 2006. And in 2011, this was my best movie of the year. And I mean, there's some other movies I could have gone with, you know, The Wolf of Wall Street. I think it's a little bit too early to go with that one. I think There'll Be Blood's another movie I just love, but this is a movie that I'm going to go with because I think it kind of fits with the style of the hall that we have right now. If that makes any sense whatsoever, I like the way this movie's done, and I'd like to see it in the hall. It also got a badass poster, by the way.
I mean, obviously, Fast Five is the best movie that came out in 2011. I'm kidding. Go ahead, Seth. I want to hear your thoughts.
I actually would prefer to defer to you.
Okay, so this is one of the. I made a list recently, right, of the best 10 movies I saw, I guess, from 2010 onward. In a lot of ways, this is the hardest movie for me to really think about what I. I don't know what I think about this movie to a certain degree. It's definitely one of the best 15 movies I've seen since 2010. I would say it's what it does in terms of, like, what you expect of the genre, what do you expect of a guy like Ryan Gosling, who's pretty much primarily playing, you know, the guy in
rom-com. Completely subvert those expectations.
You know, the physical performance he gives in a decently isolated role at times, and, like, what the difficulty of that role. And you don't really get many movies like this. I can't think of, in my head, like, another movie that kind of echoes... Which I think is Echo Park, too, so I'm kind of finding it echoes there. But, like, I can't think of another movie that really, like, echoes what it does here, you know, and, like, the different, like, levels of what it's trying to do and its vision. And it doesn't always work, but what does work is kind of beautiful. And it's a tough choice for me. I guess, like, if it's one of the best 15 movies I saw in the last, since 2010, I'd probably have to say yes then, but it's close.
To me, it's the technical side of it that is almost... Yeah, the most beautiful. I mean, I think in terms of direction, cinematography, and the soundtrack and the score. I mean, we forget to mention that. That package of the movie is just kind of one of a kind and extremely unique. And it's kind of funny. We talked about this, you know, off air. If you were to try to think of a companion piece to go with this movie, the one that would come to my mind is Nightcrawler, which is still a completely different kind of movie. But it shares some of the same sort of, you know, genre subverting tropes.
It's a movie I liked more, too, in Nightcrawler. You could have chosen Nightcrawler.
You said you liked Nightcrawler more?
Yeah, you could have chosen Nightcrawler.
Yeah, I do, too, but I just felt like it was too soon, and I wanted to go back.
Well, I guess since that's 2 of 3, that means it's in. I'm actually kind of leaning towards not letting it in.
I want to hear your thoughts, because I'm kind of bored.
I wanted to make controversy with this pick.
And you know, it's been I will admit that it's kind of been a while, and I don't have complete total recall of the movie. But as I remember it, I don't know, I just don't think Isolation plays very well. I didn't buy in very much of the movie at all. So, I mean, it's that might
how's
it might be one that I
have. That's the question. How's the poster?
I think the poster kind of lame, but you know.
David, the poster kind of lame.
How's the poster lame? That's like
it's Ryan
that's
Gosling
the most controversy
like,
that's been said the whole day.
maybe I'm looking at the wrong poster, but there's like a poster where it's like Ryan Gosling's profile, and then it's like Drive in pink letters.
Well, there's a lot of different posters, so maybe
like,
there is a lame one. That one's
so like,
lame. Yeah, the one you're talking
okay,
about.
Okay, here's my thought process. Okay, I can't really make a decision until I re-see it.
That's like, the same boat I'm in, but as it stands right now, I'm no, I'm a soft.
Like it's just you could have got like Zero Dark Thirty. You could have done with Nightcrawler from last year, like The Social Network.
God, this movie's got like 20 posters.
I don't know. I want to rewatch this movie because I don't think I've seen it recent enough to really give it due. I really did like the movie, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's Hall worthy, I guess.
Y'all can say no. I mean, I wanted to make it
controversial. It's too close. It's too close for me to say
you
no.
You want to subvert it? You want to defer this one?
I want to rewatch the movie, yeah.
Okay, we'll defer.
And this isn't like the, which I really liked Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, but I never was even like close on that decision, you know? This is a serious, like, I'm not sure because it's that close.
Well, that's good. We can defer it. At least we have. At least we're not going to have a complete sweep today, so that's good. I wanted to pick somebody that I knew was good and that I would vote in, but I wasn't entirely sure what everyone else would think about it.
Did you? That means you've got your last one, Billy, or?
Yeah, I got my last one. But do you have any more thoughts on that?
No, like I said, I'll rewatch it, but I don't have total recall of everything that happened. But as it stands right now, it's a no for me. I don't think that the movie's one of the 10 best movies I've seen.
Well, I think one thing I want to say is that this is on my list. The one movie I have to rewatch before I rewatch one, I want to rewatch Moneyball, but like ironically, like I want to like find what I can make fun of in that movie a little bit because while I really enjoyed that movie, I think there's a lot that I can laugh at like unintentionally.
Yeah, speaking of 2011 movies, right?
Yeah, I just want to say that's the other movie I really rewatch first, but I'll get to Drive. Like I'm close.
I did the strange thing. I read the book first before Moneyball, so I kind of watched the movie with a little different. I don't know. You know how you read the book then watch the movie? It kind of has a different experience. That's kind of what Moneyball was to me. I really liked it. Probably not a Hall type movie, but it's the kind of thing oh yeah, it made me think. It made me I was entertained.
I just like the fact it's like Brad Pitt, Jonah Hill, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Chris Pratt. Robin Wright and then Nick Searcy's in that movie, I'm pretty sure as well. Like it's a lot of interesting different actors. I want to rewatch that movie because I think like this is off topic, but I'll rewatch that and I'll rewatch Drive and I'll tell you guys my thoughts on watching Moneyball again.
No, I'm definitely interested.
Chris Pratt was the catcher though. I still like that fact because like that's like the pre Chris Pratt rise, but wasn't that far before it.
I mean, you could technically say that it was Chris Pratt, the Chris Pratt rise, where he's like, Parks and Rec is fun, but let's try a movie.
He's also in Zero Dark Thirty.
Yeah, he is. He plays a Navy SEAL.
Yeah, I kind of forget that as well, which is kind of interesting. I think he's also in Her.
Yeah, it's possible.
But, all right, so my last choice. So, I forgot
no.
about this movie.
No.
Yeah, okay, it's not in. All right, we're on the podcast, guys. I hope you guys enjoy it.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Okay, so this is a movie that I kind of forgot about, and the reason I forgot about it is it came out in 2000. And the director is obviously a famous one, Ridley Scott. This is not exactly a, there's a lot of, what it does direction-wise, I have no doubt it's excellent and you guys will love this, but I'm not entirely sure what you guys think about the movie. It did win Best Picture and Best Actor in Gladiator.
Gladiator.
I have no idea how you guys think about this movie, but to me, in terms of acting roles I enjoyed, I can't say Commodus. Joaquin Phoenix's Commodus is probably one of the highest three I can even think of in my life of seeing. It's right up there with the Joker and then what in No Country for Old Men, Javier Bardem does with his role. And also just in terms of like, what it does in terms of like an epic scale and the Roman that time period, like the whole place in the Colosseum from a pure action standpoint, when it came out, kind of reminds me of The Matrix in that regard of like there's not many movies like it when it came out, and there's still not many movies like it to this day. I'm actually now curious when Matrix came out, because that'd be another interesting movie to nominate. I think Matrix 1999, that's unfortunate. Anyways, the acting in that movie, the direction, the cinematography of that, there really isn't anything like it. And it's also just one of the most fun, enjoyable, I guess, man movies to watch. You know, you have, you know, Russell Crowe leading the way as Maximus. You have some of the more iconic scenes in movies between the, you know, Commodus having to give the thumbs up, the thumbs down. You have the scene where Commodus, you know, kills his father, which is one of the best scenes I've ever seen in a movie. And I have no idea how you guys think about this because I've never talked to you guys about this in my life. But even like the end,
it's very clear that we haven't talked about this because confession, I've never seen it.
Wow, interesting.
I've seen it. It's an interesting situation for me because I think in terms of heavily praised movies and movies that just get a ton of praise as being, you know, classics and all-time classics, I consider this one to be slightly overrated actually from other classics I've seen, but there are some good points that you make. I mean, there are some iconic scenes in this film. Joaquin Phoenix puts on, you know, one of his great performances that he's put in a film, and one of the best villain performances. Russell Crowe's great as well, and it's probably Ridley Scott's, you know, last great movie that I can remember seeing. I mean, I like American Gangster quite a bit, but it's not on the same
Sir
level
Ridley
as this.
Scott, you mean Sir Ridley Scott?
Sir Ridley Scott, that's right.
Yeah, give him the proper. Give him the,
yeah, exactly. He's, you know, he's like Dr. Scott, you know, but he's a knight, you know. But it is a really good movie. I mean, there's some iconic scenes. You know, the thumbs up, thumbs down scene has been turned into internet pop culture meme territory a lot of times. I'm going to go yes here. It's kind of a barely yes. I think it deserves it, but in terms of my own personal opinion, it's a little bit overrated, but it's still, you know, it's still probably a top, you know, top 50 movie.
Well, as soon as I'm finished watching Drive, I'll go ahead and watch this so we can turn it into either a resounding yes or a, you know, bleh yes.
Well, first of all, the approach is great, yeah. So let's just throw that in there, okay? Second, I think it's kind of interesting because I do know people who didn't like this movie, you know, as much as it's like a critically acclaimed. But like, if I think about the different like best picture winners from 2000, I mean, nothing. I mean, really, it comes down to it, nothing besides I guess like Return of the King really comes close to it in the early 2000s. And in the later 2000s, I mean, I think it's better than The Hurt Locker. I think it's arguably better than, you know, anything that came out in the last couple years.
This didn't even win Best Picture.
Gladiator won Best Picture in 2000.
I think my biggest problem with this movie, though, Seth, it
did win Best Picture 2000.
It's funny. I googled Best Picture 2000, and American Beauty came up.
American Beauty was 1999. That came out. The 2000 was the year the 1999.
That's the Oscar cycle. It's 1998, 1999. Okay.
Yeah.
Oscars,
okay.
Since, yeah.
No. All right. Okay. Cool.
I mean,
I just fucking Google.
I can't think of a when you talk like all the other Best Picture winners. I mean, if There Will Be Blood won, then that would be a definite better. No Country for Old Men's kind of close, in my opinion. But like, I can't think of a better Best Picture winner besides maybe like Return of the King in terms of like since 2000.
I think it's my problem with this movie is that a lot of the – I don't get as much emotional resonance from it as I do in some other like great movies. Like, I mean, I do like the characters and I like the performances, but I think the kind of – the combination of the genre and – I think some of the scenes where it was supposed to have a heavy emotional impact, I wasn't quite as connected. Maybe because I looked at it, I was like, oh, I'm looking at a classic. I'm looking at Russell Crowe. I'm looking at all these guys I know. And the characters, I mean, Ridley Scott's has never been a great writer, first thing. And
jeez, I think this might be the strongest writing performance of any movie I've seen by Ridley Scott in terms of like those scenes themselves, a lot of it was the acting and the production level. But like I said, the scene where Commodus essentially kills his father is one of the better written scenes I've ever seen. Even the stuff in the arena, which could have been as hokey, you know, I think was done phenomenally in terms of, like, example, when Commodus turns his when Commodus goes up to Maximus, and Maximus turns his back after winning the big battle, you know, and the only reason he doesn't, like, try to stab him with the dagger is because the kid was there.
Yeah.
There's so many things that are done so well. Me and one of my friends always make lines in this movie, but it's also mostly Joaquin Phoenix is so good as Commodus. There's so many times you can try to imitate what he does, and most movies cannot.
Like I said, it's a yes, but I just also want to express that like it's not.
It's a yes, but
I don't hold
it
in quite as much highest esteem as some other people do.
It's a yes. I won't keep it out of the hall, but let me get my own snooty opinion.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm surprised you haven't seen it, Seth, because I think this is.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing. It was on Netflix, and I've moused over it a couple times. One time, I chose The Wolf of Wall Street instead.
Great choice. Still, I'm not going to disagree with that one.
And the other time, I think I chose Good Will Hunting instead. So,
And I think like it's in terms of like big, you know, budget box office movies too, or radar movies, I don't think you really can get much better than what this
I might
does.
Even try to watch it today, if it's still on Netflix, so.
Okay, well, I guess I'm not... I was actually, this is one of those movies where I could have seen you guys saying no, because I know it's a little more divisive than I think it should be, but it is. I mean, and a lot of it is because it's a long movie, you know, with a big budget that tries to do a lot of things.
Nothing wrong with that.
But seriously, though, Joaquin Phoenix.
God, I hated him in Inherent Vice.
I didn't hate him in Inherent Vice. I just didn't like Inherent Vice a lot.
Yeah, that's probably a better way of putting it.
I liked Inherent Vice.
Look, David, we know you. You're going to like the guys in the movies you like. And like, you're going to love True Detective. You're going to love Jurassic World. You're going to love everything PTA. That's you, man. You're going to stick with what you love, and I appreciate that. I admire that.
I mean, this is a good movie, and it deserves to be in the hall. I mean, I agree. I just kind of had slight quibbles with it. Just like I don't really think that I think Shawshank Redemption is another movie that kind of gets maybe a little bit more praise than it deserves.
Now I'm mad. How dare you? How dare you hate on Shawshank Redemption?
But if it got nominated, I would vote it in.
But you know, he also thinks Michael Fassbender isn't as good as Tom Hardy, so there's that.
I mean, that's close enough. Next you say Schindler's List.
It's not.
All right. What do you say about Schindler's List?
Schindler's List be, yeah, it's all black and white and stuff, and you know, it's,
I didn't like the monochromatic palette.
Needs more style.
I just
Liam nice and poor acting decision, poor casting choice.
I can't even say. Ralph
Pretty amazing Nye. Fact here that
isn't
Steven
it like
Spielberg
Ray
shot
Fiennes?
The Lost World and
exactly.
It's a pretty amazing that he shot Jurassic Park and Shawshank Redemption back to back.
Is that like the best like?
I think it's the best double punch of like within a year's worth of time of like a director performance. I mean, both those movies came out the same year.
I'm sure I'm sure Mike Tyson had a couple good double punches.
So now I have a. That's pretty good. I have a question now. What are you guys' opinions on Saving Private Ryan?
One of the best war movies. By genre alone, probably, but that's another one I probably need to read.
It's a great movie. It would not be
idea.
In my. I'm not sure how long it'll take me to vote that one into the Hall of Fame, but
another that was actually what I wanted to put in, except I realized it was like 1990s. But in terms of like the opening scene of that, I guess on D-Day is probably one of my all-time favorite scenes ever.
I think there are other Spielberg movies that deserve to be in it above it, but
that's actually a really interesting conversation. What are the Spielberg movies you think are probably like its pinnacle of his career? Because obviously. I mean, I like, you know, Schindler's List, Saving Private Ryan, Jurassic Park.
I mean, I like his, like, geeky early movies a lot, you know. I mean, Schindler's List obviously does deserve it. Jurassic Park.
Well, Jaws
you know,
is the best.
E.T. Jaws, obviously. I like Close Encounters of the Third Kind a bunch. I mean, there's a lot of good movies that he made. Saving Private Ryan.
Indiana Jones.
Raiders of the Lost Ark, I mean, for sure.
Oh, dude, our favorite, War Horse.
Nope, not that piece of crap.
I ignore his last.
Oh, I actually really, really better than probably I should. I really like Catch Me If You Can.
I like that movie though. That was a
I
lot
deserve
of fun.
It
that
too.
That's actually one of the best movies I think to come out in 2000. Just in what it does, and also it's Tom Hanks and DiCaprio. Like, what more do you want for two leads?
War of the Worlds with Tom Cruise.
Don't even talk about that movie.
Two DiCaprios.
War of the Worlds. I just want to say that's the movie where I realized how bad of like an athlete Tom Cruise must be.
Do y'all remember Twister? That was Spielberg, apparently.
Twister was Spielberg?
Twister was Spielberg.
They actually had a write about that.
Okay, it wasn't directed by Spielberg, but...
He produces a lot of stuff.
Alright, we should probably get out of here, because we've been a lot like off-topic side-tack. This is already like an hour and 20 minutes.
That's fine.
No, Hall of Fame episodes definitely deserve it, but...
I mean, maybe you could split it into two if you really feel like it.
Come on, we're not that kind. We're not going to, like, you know, be lazy and split into two just so we don't have to do it next week.
This is more impressive than the True Detective Season 1 one take.
Alright, anyways, let's get out of here. I'm Billy White.
Seth Judiak.
I'm David Hunter.
And I promise you this will not be two parts. Next week it'll be two parts. Don't do a show. Right. See everyone.